The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth.
If you study revolution, there are always three things that are present in every single one: economic instability, war, and civil unrest. We talked about it for a long time, top down, bottom up, and inside out. You are caught in the middle of the turning of everything inside out, and you're standing there in chaos. And pretty soon, the bottom cries out for anybody to listen. Anyone, just make it all stop. I don't care what it takes. After getting bogged down in multiple foreign wars, economic meltdown was inevitable. The ineffective and increasingly corrupt government was powerless to stop it. In fact, it actually appeared to many that they wanted it to happen. Spending, then borrowing, then spending, then borrowing. And in 3 years, the national debt doubled. Was it a surprise that the academics and other members of the middle class began inciting the poor and disenfranchised and said, "We need violence"? What I described might sound familiar, might sound like it's today, but it's actually what led to the French storming the Bastille in 1789. How many pressure points can a nation endure? In America, we've been bogged down in foreign wars since the turn of the 21st century. Now North Korea knocking at our door. Our national debt has nearly quadrupled from the year 2000 till today. First Harvey, now Irma. An already weakened economy and civil unrest in the streets. What people are now preaching for and advocating with DACA. We are approaching difficult times. Times that we haven't seen since perhaps the 1960s. People like Francis Fox Piven were advocating for the same kind of violence in 2004. The Occupy movement just happened a few years after that and didn't quite make it. Fast forward a few years and we have Antifa and the Nazis on the street, all trying to light us on fire. The pressure points are being pushed and we have tough times ahead. Beware of those inciting violence and advocating hate. Chaos is coming, but so is tomorrow. This too shall pass is the promise, not this too shall stay. Honestly, I got up this morning and I thought the only reason to get out of bed is because we have each other. We know what really has meaning. And we have tomorrow, and tomorrow always promises a new and brighter horizon.
Wednesday, September 6th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Okay, maybe not entirely a new and brighter horizon, because we have Joe Bastardi on the phone. And Joe is the chief meteorologist, or the chief. What is exactly your title?
I'm a chief meteorologist. I have a degree in meteorology. And that degree is hard to get. It was for me.
Right.
A lot of math and physics. So I make sure I let people know I'm not just a forecaster.
And he
even though I play one on the radio.
He is with weatherbell.com, and Joe's a friend of the program and been around forever and is probably one of the most accurate voices when it comes to calling hurricanes, for sure, in the world. And we're thrilled to have him on. Joe, we weren't even seeing Harvey come on shore yet when you started telling us, wait, there's another one coming that might even be more dangerous. Can you tell us the latest is on Irma?
Well, Irma's over the northeast of the Virgin Islands right now, and it's going to pass north of Puerto Rico. It would probably spare Puerto Rico a devastating hurricane. In fact, I'm sure it's going to spare them. It's not going to be like Hugo in 89. So they're going to have a hurricane on the north coast of Puerto Rico. There's no question about that. Probably 80 to 100 mile an hour wind gusts, but they're not getting into that inner core that had to be just absolutely horrific over those islands last night, Barbuda, St. Martin, where this thing hit directly, the devastation that's going to come out of there is probably something that few people have ever seen in the Western Hemisphere in these islands. Now, I don't say that lightly. If you're getting blasted by 150 to 175 mile an hour winds for 2-3 hours, and as this eye wall comes across, because it didn't move real quickly, I'm sure that the pictures will bear out my dire warnings here as to what's going on. The storm itself is probably going to be, as far as the meteorologists evaluate storms, the most powerful long-lived storm we've ever seen. And it's something we said. I mean, when this thing came off Africa, we had it very quickly growing into a major hurricane because the atmosphere, we're in a pattern for that type of thing. And so what will happen is, by what we measure it, what we call accumulated cyclonic energy, this probably will be the strongest on record because it went for such a long distance. You got to understand that this thing's been a major hurricane since 2-3 days ago. The future path, that's what everybody's interested in, of course. And this is going to go north of Puerto Rico, 60 to 100 miles. They have a hurricane on the north coast. It's going to go north of Hispaniola and the Turks and Caicos Islands in the south, the southeast Bahamas chain are in direct path of what just happened, St. Martin and Barbuda. And that reaches there in about 36 to 48 hours. After that, I think the track bends back to the west a bit, and that's significant because it's moving west-northwest, west-northwest. If it turned northwest and north, it escapes east to the United States. But I think it bends back west is significant for two reasons. One, obviously it closes the distance on the United States. But two, these bends in the track to the left, and this is something I give credit to my professors at Penn State, Dr. John Lee, back in the 1970s, taught us this, that when you have a hurricane in the Atlantic that bends its path back to the left a bit, and I talked about this a couple times, what it does is this intensification parameter comes on. So a second place where this thing could become even stronger than now, the next place is right to the southeast of Florida. That area just to the west of the Bahamas, the Florida Straits, that area is where this storm could reach its maximum intensity. And the question then becomes, when does it make the right turn northward? Right now, I think it's near or over the east coast of Florida. Very, very close. Now, yesterday, I thought it might be on the west coast of Florida. So what's going on, Glenn, and I want the audience to understand, because everybody goes and looks at these computer models. The U.S.-generated models have a north bias in the 3 to 5 day period. In other words, they like to, if you watched what this was doing with Irma, it had it too far north initially. So what it's probably doing is, and people are getting on looking, oh, look at this, it's going out here. It's probably adjusting too much to the north and east. So we have it coming right, almost right on the Florida coast, Sunday into Monday, and then continuing northward. Actually, okay. I guess it's Saturday night, Sunday, Monday, continuing northward into the Carolinas after that.
Joe, thank you very much.
That was Joe Bastardi of WeatherBell.com. He came on the show with us before Harvey hit and said, by the way, everyone's talking about Harvey, it's going to be bad, but wait until you see Irma. That's just forming now.
Although I felt a little bit better talking to him, I mean, somewhat, although, you know, it is coming back to the United States. It hit this morning at 2 a.m. Eastern time as it passed over Antigua, and the local radio, the last words that were heard over local radio, may God protect us all. And the radio went dead. They're starting an evacuation of the Keys, I believe. Is that tomorrow morning? Or is today Wednesday? Yeah, today's Wednesday. So I believe the evacuation of the Keys is happening. Did anybody see the story of Tampa Bay and how Tampa Bay is not prepared for a major hurricane? The only reason why I bring this up is because it kind of reminded me of the conversation that we had about a year before Katrina. And the story was that if a major hurricane would hit New Orleans, New Orleans was a death trap and just wasn't prepared. And I see now, last week, that Tampa Bay is just not prepared. 700 miles of shoreline. And if Katrina would hit, they estimate that a hit of $175 billion to the Tampa Bay area would happen. Hopefully, Irma will not roll in to Tampa Bay. One other thing. We've been hearing that this storm is going to be one of the biggest to come on land. In fact, earlier they were saying that we're even thinking about coming up with a Category 6. They seem eager to do that. Is it just me? They seem eager. As we're looking at the 17 Atlantic hurricanes with the maximum winds, up until, what was it, yesterday or the day before, Irma was, what, 16th?
Yeah, I mean, it hit 175, and then I think yesterday hit 185.
So it was in 17th place for storms, and had the potential of getting worse. Yesterday, it hit 185, which ties it with the 1935 storm of the Florida Keys. It's before we were naming them. Gilbert in 88, Wilma in 2005, and the highest maximum wind ever recorded for the United States was Hurricane Allen in 1980. All right, let's take a quick break. So today I come in and I turn on the television monitor array that is sitting in front of me with the time and the four television monitors, et cetera, et cetera. And I have to tell you, I took a picture because in 40 years of broadcast, I've never seen anything like this. In one monitor was what was happening in Texas, a major U.S. humanitarian and economic disaster with Irma on the way. That was the topic, I think, on Fox. And then underneath that was CNN, which was the pretty credible threat of nuclear war with North Korea. And then the bottom one was about DACA and the seeds of political and civil unrest. And I thought to myself, I haven't seen anything like that before.
All that, and they've taken Coke Zero off the market too.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's this is we're reading the Book of Revelation. You got to get to the point to where you're like, this is going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how this all works out, isn't it? Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, I saw Mark Maron, a special that he did. I think it was on Netflix, and the guy's super, 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 I bleed liberal. But there is something that is bringing us together, and it is that whole idea of, this is going to be interesting. He was talking about how you're not surprised by anything anymore.
I don't know what he's going to do next. And the people that voted for him, they don't know what he's going to do next. And it's just crazy. It's just, you know, the people he's appointing is crazy. I mean, it's gotten to the point where I can say things to you that would never make sense previous. But now you'd be like, all right. Like, I can walk up to you like, hey, man, did you hear they're making the Grand Canyon a landfill? What? Yeah. Yeah, they're doing that. Yeah, I guess that makes sense, I guess. But what's their logic? Well, you know, how many times you got to see that thing? You know, they're just going to do half of it, and the other half you can still see. I bet people go see the garbage too, because that's a lot of garbage. It's going to be a double thing now. Yeah, I mean, I could see why they would do that. It's okay to hunt at zoos now. What? Yeah, the new EPA guy, I don't know. I guess it's okay. Like, right? I guess that makes sense with their logic, I guess. It's going to be a whole different thing for the kids now, I guess. So, yeah. A lot of those animals are almost extinct anyway. Might as well just get it over with, you know? Extinction's sort of a proactive term with these guys. Some things you never thought you'd say, like, wow, these Nazis are annoying.
They've been annoying for a long time, to be fair. It's funny because he obviously applies the sort of liberal anti-Trump thing there. But I mean, it really is, I think, for everybody the exact same way.
It is exactly the same. We've been there longer than they have.
Yeah.
They think they're tired of it. We just went through 8 years of feeling that way. You're just there. You are the replacement troops. We're the ones that have been on the beach for a while going, is that okay? I guess I can see that now. How many?
So crazy.
Others, they just added a 93rd gender. I can see that.
Yeah, it's true. Sure. We're at that point now where we just accept it. We've been hit with so many things we never thought we'd see in our entire lives.
No.
It's just everything.
And you're just like, huh? Okay. Well, yeah, I got it. Yeah, sure. All right, I'll just throw that one in the back.
See, we are becoming more tolerant. Look at that. It is actually working.
We really are
being more tolerant.
We are. Mm-hmm. All of us. It's not that we're tolerant. It's just we've just given up.
Well, that's kind of the same as tolerance, isn't it?
I don't know.
Tolerance is just the idea. All right, whatever. That's why I never understood why it was something you'd argue for. Like the hey, this, you know, the high-minded goal that we have is everyone kind of just shrugs their shoulders as we walk by. That's kind of the standard.
It really is. Kind of like, okay.
All right.
Okay. We'll see how that works out. Sure. That sounds great.
It's not all horrific news, however. I mean, there are actual good, sane, sensible people doing
sane,
sensible things.
They're hard to find.
Well, that's why they're news stories when you find them.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's why they're in the news now.
Right. Nobody says, hey, a man went to go get coffee at McDonald's today. That's common.
Right.
When people do things that are good, they become news stories.
Right.
But J.J. Watt is the latest great example, I think. J.J. Watt, if you don't know, and I know you don't, Glenn.
I do. I know this. He plays for Houston. And they're not the Oilers anymore.
They are not the Oilers anymore. Oil is hateful, so you can't be the Oilers anymore. These are the, of course, a new franchise, the Houston Texans, which I guess it's still okay to be a Texan. See how long that one lasts before they change that name.
I mean, you can hear they're banning all Texans.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. Oh. Yeah, I could see that.
Huh. Yeah, I could see that. So Watt is arguably the best player in the NFL. I mean, depending on how you define that, he's a great player. His city gets hit by this hurricane. They're suffering through it. He decides he's going to do something. He texts his PR person. I'm going to start this campaign. Hopefully others will join in on it. This is going to be the page. Links to a YouCaring page. YouCaring.com. Then he is going to donate $100,000 to hurricane relief. And he's going back and forth with a PR person. Like, I don't know whether I should add my $100,000 first to kind of get it going, or wait till it gets to $100,000 and then double it to get to my goal of $200,000. He wanted to raise $200,000, which is not nothing. Even if for an NFL player, it's still...
Last time I saw this, I think it was at $5
million. Yes. It's gone up a little bit more than that.
What's it at now?
Yesterday hit $20 million.
Holy cow.
$20 million. And again, yes, you could say it's J.J. Watt. He's a big star. He's a celebrity.
He
started this with the hopes of a normal person. And linking to a campaign, he's going to throw in a big chunk of money, but he wasn't looking for this. And it's because people came together. They have reacted to it. I think Ellen put $1 million of her own money into this campaign. I mean, tons of big organizations have come in, but, you know, it's still going to be mainly small donations.
Yeah, I think this is a deal where it really shows, we don't really trust people. We don't trust organizations anymore. You know, I see that guy on TV and I like him and I trust him. And he's doing something. I'll go with him. I'm not sure. How many people have you heard say, I want to give, but I just don't know who to give to right now. You know, I think this is testimony of that, and also testimony on how generous this country still is.
Mercury.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, we have Cheryl Atkinson on today. She has written an incredibly powerful book about how the media and how the left has manipulated the media to destroy person after person after person. It is a must-read book if you are trying to discover the networks or figure out exactly how all of this has come to be and where we're supposed to go next. She'll be joining us. Also, I saw the new Mitch Rapp movie last night, American Assassin, the Vince Flynn movie. Vince was a good friend of mine and just loved him. And his wife wrote to me last week. I think she's going to be joining us Thursday. So is that tomorrow? Maybe. But I think
we have his co-author on tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I think she may be joining us too as well. I'm not sure, but there's a new movie out and it's really good.
Yeah, if you don't know Vince Flynn's work, he was one of the biggest fiction writers in America. Passed away a few years ago, but a great guy, and these books are fantastic. Finally, they've made a movie out of this.
Yeah.
And it looks great. The
really
trailer looks amazing.
You'll love it. You'll love it. It's very good. You know, just a quick personal note. You know, we've made a lot of changes, and I'm not going to sit here and... The one thing I'll be real honest with you. If I could just go away today, I would. I really would. If I could just... Yeah, there's nobody sick of listening to me more than me. Really. I have to listen to me all the time.
I'm willing to enter a competition on that one.
But if you've listened to me for a long time, you know that I'm driven by different things. And so about, I don't know, 6 months ago, after Tommy left, and I had nothing to do with the hiring or the firing of Tommy. And I just realized, you know what? I'm getting all the blame for everything that Blaze does anyway. I'm just going to take it. And so I started looking into not only the Blaze, but where is the future? What is happening to media? The media does not work anymore. And I don't think people understand that it's all going to change. CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, it's not going to be this way. I think if we're not all careful, we'll all be edited and working for Facebook, Amazon, and Google. And when I say all of us, I mean, well, half of the journalists will be working for those guys. The rest of them will be, I don't know where our voices will be. But we have to find a new way. So I've made some changes to this program. This is the first change, and we're just at the very beginning of this. And I haven't told you about the changes that we're making because, quite honestly, I'm sick of hearing me talk about it. And so in the next couple of weeks, you're going to start seeing some changes on the television network. That's why Pat is doing his own radio and television show now. It's a 3-hour show, the Pat Gray program, which is follows this program on the Blaze Radio Network. And also seen on television. Pat is one of the best talk show hosts in the country. And so we have him doing that. Stu is now by my side full time and the executive producer of everything that we do because he's, quite honestly, the best producer in the country and quite a brilliant mind. I know you don't usually get that when you're listening, but he is quite a brilliant guy.
I try to hold that back for, you know, my side ventures.
So I wrote on Facebook, I think this was Monday night or Sunday night. We begin tomorrow a new experiment to prove to the media and ourselves that you can be profitable and tell the truth. If those of us on the right don't stop our infighting and figure this out, we're all going to fall one by one to Google, Facebook, Amazon, and Apple, and they will be the portals of all information.
Where'd you post this again?
I think this is on Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah, I know.
You mean the portal?
I know. Yes.
They're winning this battle, by the way.
They already are. I mean, they're changing things now to the point to where if you're not posting things through them, the algorithm actually penalizes you. And so you everybody is sitting there. Nobody's talking about this. And last week we issued something on Medium, which was an in-depth look at what is happening with the conservative media, and only Mediaite took the time to read it and to say, wow, this is a discussion maybe we should be having. But it's not for the, it is for the entire media, but it's mainly for conservative media. We are at a crossroads. Things are changing. You know, we all of us in talk radio have done what Rush Limbaugh did. We all have been birthed from Rush Limbaugh. This is the medium that Rush Limbaugh created. And it was a viable option. And it was needed. In 1990, when he came on, nobody had heard the conservative argument. No, because nobody was making it. And so what he did was he would give you the argument so you knew it and you could give it to your friends. But then Rush Limbaugh and the people like me, we all started doing that. And all of our friends went, oh, but you're listening to Glenn Beck? I don't want to hear that argument. It's Glenn Beck. And so it became ineffective because no one on the left was listening to our argument. There was nobody to tell that argument to except each other. We have to change now and say, okay, if we want to make progress, we have to have an argument that's not made for us, but is made to reach out beyond us and say, guys, this is the way it works. This is how this works. This is why it works. And we have to change everything that we do.
That sounds like a big tent argument, but it's actually the reverse of it. The big tent has been, let's make the tent bigger. We'll just accept other viewpoints. We'll accept other arguments. We'll accept bigger government. We'll accept more
taxes.
It
is why we will have the Gang of Eight deciding our immigration policy. We made the tent bigger, and then we got vitriolic about it. And I'm telling you, you're going to have this immigration, the final immigration bill is going to look like everything you fought against. Why? So I wrote on Monday a promise that I want to make you now. And it's a promise that I've made for years. But then, quite honestly, I got tired. And I'm not going to waste your time. And that's one of the things we're trying to do on the radio show. If you've listened yesterday or today, and we don't have it right yet by any stretch, but we're just not going to waste your time. I am trying to cut out all of the crap and get right to the point of the story and tell you the stories that actually impact your life. Because why should I waste a second on doing the things that you can get from 100 different sites? There are better people that write and that can tell a story of, you know, politics or whatever. They're great experts. I want to point you to those people, and we'll do what we do best. Next week, every writer in this country or this company is going to be joining me for a week. And it's appropriate that we start on September 11th and September 12th. And then on the 18th, there will be an MVP version, if you will, of The Blaze that is going to start to try to deliver news in a different way. And you know what? The world can dismiss us, and they might be right. They might be right. I don't know. If you have to run clickbait, if you have to run misleading headlines, if you have to say outrageous things to be successful, if those things are true, then I'm going to shut it all down. Because I can't do it. And I don't think it's a positive thing. I think it actually hurts us deeply in the end. So I'll go find another way. Even if it's just teaching it to my children, that's what I'll do.
There's a great story in The Resurgent today about this changeover, kind of going through a lot of the stuff that you wrote and comparing it to the mission statement that Jerry Maguire wrote after he had the revelation that almost everything he had been doing in his business life was wrong. Of course, in the movie, Jerry ended up taking a big hit, much like The Blaze itself, with the layoffs of 20% of its workforce and a lot of people I loved. They're awesome. But in the end, he had to lose in order to win later. I hope this is the case with Glenn's venture.
That's nice. Who wrote that?
That is The Resurgent and the author, Mark Giller.
Thank you, Mark. That is nice.
Yeah, really cool. And he got Renee Zellweger, too, which I don't know if that comes along with your...
had me at Renee Zellweger. You did. ¶¶ So I'm looking at the headlines today. And I'm trying to find, you know, I honestly feel like the starfish up against the glass. Find your happy place. Find your happy place. Find your happy place. Yesterday, my wife, I came home and I said, hey, honey, how are you? And she said, good. Of course, it didn't start out so well. And I said, what do you mean? She said, well, I listened to your show. She said, I said, was it bad? She said, oh, just, you know, just a little depressing. Like, yeah. And Stu walked in today and I said, how do we talk about the thing? Because we're in a spell right now. And this too shall pass. But we're in this spell right now where this is the windup. This is the windup. And this is where the real tension begins. Remember, I said to you a few weeks ago, we're at the end of the beginning. We're now at the beginning of the middle. And the middle, if you think of life as a three-act play, the middle is where you do all the hard work and it decides the ending. And so we're in this transition period where things are about to hit the fan. And you look at headlines like this: Philippines government will kill women and children if they're fighting for ISIS. Oh, okay. Kentucky public employee retirements surge as fears of pension collapse mounts. Moody's threatens to permanently downgrade the U.S. credit rating. this is my favorite bleak headline of the day. Venezuelans eat dogs and zoo animals.
Maybe they didn't legalize hunting in zoos after all.
I mean, it's when you read that, you're like, okay, I'm expecting. Oh, and I was watching TV and it wasn't a movie. I'm pretty sure it was live. The Statue of Liberty was buried in sand and there was gorillas on horses. I just feel like it's the Planet of the Apes all of a sudden.
That's as dark as you got, is what they're eating.
I've got more. Nigerian ministers kidnapped, murdered by unknown gunman.
Because you get to the point with like these, a lot of these stories, you're thankful they're not here yet. That is the only way you can react to them. Oh, well, at least we're not quite eating zoo animals yet and dogs in the streets. That's kind of nice.
And you know what? And here's the great thing, is there is great hope that we're not going to, you know, not because hopefully we won't have to get to that point, but you see what's happening in Houston.
Yeah.
You know, so many of us, at least this happens to me. I don't know if this happens to you. You're probably a much better person than I am.
Fact check, true.
That's fine, because I just gave that four Pinocchios. But, you know, the thing that really helped me was going to Houston and seeing people. We're spending too much time thinking about ourselves. Way too much time thinking about ourselves and thinking about how bad our problems are. When you get to Houston and you're shoveling the crap out of somebody's house, and you realize, wow, that crap is their life. That's everything they've done in life. That's all the pictures. It's all the memories. It's all the books. It's all the everything they've ever done is in that house. I'm now taking it and I'm shoveling it out into a muddy pile in the front where a garbage crane is going to come and just, you know, lift it up and put it in the back of a garbage truck and they'll sort through it later.
Or they won't. I mean, most likely they won't, right? I mean,
well, the it's interesting. The reason why you can be arrested, it's called looting. If you go up and you get permission from somebody, hey, can I take this? And you get permission from the owner, you're okay. But nobody wants to do that because, especially in Texas, because you'll be shot for looting. But the only reason why that happens is because the federal government has made a deal with these companies that come in and they just take all of the stuff from everybody's lawn and then they sort through it. And they go, okay, this is salvageable. This isn't. Here's a refrigerator that can be repaired. That can't be. You know, this is all scrap metal. And so somebody else does that. So once you put that out on your lawn, the company that has the deal with the government actually owns all of that stuff. You don't really own it anymore. Not always going to fight you on that, but you don't really own it anymore. it's become a, it's a big business. Hurricanes are a big business in the scrap company world.
Mercury. Love. Courage. Truth.
It won't survive. That is what the former FEMA director said when he was asked how the Miami area would hold up under a severe water surge from a major hurricane related to the flooding. It won't survive. Hurricane Irma is now in a projected path to make landfall in South Florida, and it could hit Miami this Sunday. It's currently a Category 5 with 185-mile-an-hour winds. It's already the second strongest storm recorded in the Atlantic. Amazingly, Miami hasn't been hit by a major hurricane Category 4 or stronger since 1926. That one killed 400 people, the third deadliest hurricane in U.S. history. But Miami at the time was this quaint little resort compared to what it is today. Yesterday, two firms estimated a repeat of the 1926 Miami hurricane could cause $130 billion in property damage. People are already starting to think about getting out of Miami. So why is it so dangerous? Well, its flood control system, it was designed in the 1950s, and it desperately needs updating. It's kind of like what happened with Hurricane Katrina. What was built in the 60s and the 50s, no longer any good. Our government has blown through hundreds of billions of dollars on wasteful spending that could have been applied to preparation for Miami. Last year, the government found money to study TV binge watching, comedy clubs. Honest to God, we spent money studying monkey drool, fish treadmill endurance testing. I didn't even know they worked on treadmills. They also spent money on hamster fights. Miami has been the home of a radio and TV station attempting to broadcast into Cuba. It was blocked by Fidel Castro. $500 million flushed down the toilet on a radio station and TV station nobody ever watched or heard. What happens when you have a country more concerned with political favors than prioritizing what really matters? Let me quote FEMA. It won't survive.
Wednesday, September 6th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
North Carolina man accused of killing his wife, believe it or not, in a cough syrup-induced stupor, was an aspiring preacher and a Star Wars devotee who had a lightsaber fight at his wedding. His wife sounded like a remarkable woman. They both volunteered at their church all the time. They, you know, worked with kids. They were great. This story broke over the weekend, and I don't know if you heard it, but the story broke over the weekend about Ryan and his wife, Lauren. They're both, I'm sorry, Matthew is his name, and Lauren. They're both 29 years old. He was taking Coricidin. Coricidin is a cough syrup. And quite honestly, I listened to the 911 call, and when I first heard it, I thought, I don't believe you. But I listened to the entire thing. By the end of the 911 call, you absolutely believe he had no idea what he was doing. I want you to listen to the call. Here it is.
911 with the address of your emergency.
Patuxent Drive.
Okay, I'm just going to read that address to make sure we have it right.
Patuxent Drive, Raleigh, North Carolina.
Okay, and what is your first and last name? Phone number you calling from?
Phone number?
Yes, sir. Tell me exactly what happened.
I think I killed my...
What do you mean by that? What happened?
I had a dream, and then I turn on the lights and she's dead on the floor.
How?
I have blood all over me, and there's a bloody knife on the bed, and I think I did it.
Okay. Alright, stay on the phone with me. I'm getting her ambulance, okay?
I can't believe this. I can't believe this.
When did you wake up to find this?
I don't even know what time it is.
Alright, stay on the phone with me, sir. I just gotta ask you a few questions, okay? I'm getting some help to you. Are you with the patient now?
Yeah, I can see her.
Okay. Alright, how old is the patient? How's your
wife? She's 29.
Okay. Is she awake at all right now? What makes you think she's dead? Is she awake?
She's not breathing.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Okay, do you think she is beyond any help?
I don't know. I'm too scared to get too close to her.
Okay, just stay on the phone with me, sir. I'm here with you. I'm here with you.
I'm so scared.
All right, I've already sent the paramedics to help you, okay? I'm sending someone to assist you. Just please leave everything as you found it. Is there anything else we can do for you, sir? Where's the knife right now?
Knife on the bed. I'm not next to it, so I don't have a weapon on me or anything like that.
Okay. When did you wake up?
I don't know. I took more medicine than I should have.
What medicine did you take?
I took HCP cough and cold, because I know it can make you feel good, so a lot of times I can't sleep at night.
Okay.
And I took some.
All right, medicine. What are you sure she's not breathing?
She's not moving. Oh my God.
Okay, I'm gonna stay here with you, okay? Let's see if she's breathing, okay?
Alright,
can you see her from where you're at?
Yeah, it's so bad. There's so much blood.
Okay, alright. I'm gonna stay here on the phone with you until help gets there, okay? Just don't touch anything. Just look at is she breathing at all? Is her chest moving? Is anything going on with her?
No.
Okay. Well, we're gonna leave.
Blood is dried on me.
It's dried.
The blood's not wet on me. The blood is dry. So I don't know what. Oh my God.
All right, well, we're going to at least try to help her, okay? All right, All right, I've already sent the paramedics to help you. Just stand alone. I'm going to tell you exactly what to do next, okay? Are you right by her?
Oh, my God. I mean, I can see her, but... Oh, my God.
Stay with me, sir. I know this is upsetting, but we're going to try to do as much for her as you can. If you're not sure that she's gone, we're going to try to help her, okay? So just listen carefully.
Oh, my God.
Just listen, okay, sir. First, just look at her right now. Tell me what you see. Is the chest moving? Is she breathing? Anything at all?
No, she's not moving at all. Oh my God.
I understand, sir. I understand, but right now we just want to make sure we're doing as much as possible.
Oh
Is there anyone else at all in the home with you, or is it just you and her?
No, it's just me and her.
Where are you in the house? Where are you in the house, sir?
In the back of the house. There's a light on it.
Okay, well... All right, is the door unlocked?
I don't know.
Can you go do that for me, sir? That way the paramedics can get in. Are you able to do that?
No.
Okay, go ahead. Stay on the phone with me. Go ahead and unlock the door, okay?
That's not blue light.
What'd you say, sir?
Nobody.
Go ahead and unlock the door. Let me know once you've done that, okay? Let me know when the door's unlocked. Okay. You said officers are there?
No.
I'm gonna let you go.
Holy cow. That was the 911 audio of something that happened this weekend. Man said he killed his wife. He was in a drug stupor, chloroquine cough medicine, and didn't know it. More in a second. North Carolina man accused of killing his wife in a cough syrup-induced stupor. We just played the 911 phone call, and what amazed me was at the beginning I thought, okay, I don't buy this at all. Then I started listening to him, and to me, he said, have you ever been on Benadryl, to where you take so much Benadryl, you could actually be on fire, and you would tell somebody, yeah, I think I'm on fire right now. I'm not really sure. I mean, were you just, there's just, you're not feeling anything.
And then you kill your wife?
No, that's not the experience. However, this guy, I'm not suggesting that he's innocent or shouldn't go to jail or anything else. I believe that he didn't know what he was doing. However, I think where he's going to have trouble is if you listened to this part of the call very early on. Listen to what he says.
I took more medicine than I should have.
What medicine did you take?
I took chloroquine, cough and cold, chloroquine, HCP, cough and cold, because I know it can make you feel good. So a lot of times I can't sleep at night.
Okay.
So he's saying, I know it can make you feel good. Now, just understand that it might be that I was sick, but he said I can't sleep at night. So he's taking this, and he knows he's taking more than he should. This is why this is a problem for him. And I don't even give the website, but one of our researchers found a website where you can go, and they'll tell, drug users are like, oh, this is a great, here's what you do. Looked up chloroquine. Now, chloroquine is DXM, a cough suppressant. This is what one of the drug users wrote about this. It didn't start to kick in till about 2 a.m. I started to lose concentration while on the computer. I couldn't focus on anything for a long period of time. I went up to go get a drink of water, and when I got up, I still felt like I was sitting down. When I walked down the hall, everything around me was one big blur, except for the object I was looking at just ahead of me. So right now I'm thinking, oh yeah, this is pretty cool, end quote. Eventually, the trip was beginning to get more and more intense. Suddenly, my heartbeat jumped twice its rate, and my breathing was so heavy. Right there, I thought I was going to die. I tried to calm down by listening to some light music, but that only helped for a couple of minutes. I needed to go to the bathroom really bad, so I got up. I felt like I was still sitting down. I walked to the bathroom. I almost passed out. Everything got really fuzzy, and then I was standing. I heard this loud pop. I didn't know what it was, but it sounded real. It also sounded fake. I kept hearing these metallic sounds. Now I was freaking out. I went back to my computer and I was telling my friends how freaked out I was by what was going on. By now, I was at the peak of my trip. It was 4 a.m. Eventually, I calmed down a bit and I thought I could sleep. So I told my friend I was all right. I went to bed. I kept waking up and then my room started to shake. My mind was going insane. I couldn't handle this. I got back on my computers, on my computer. My friend was still on. I asked him, how long have I been asleep for? He said, 5 minutes. What the hell? Now I couldn't think, thinking that if I did, I would mess with something in my body and I would die. I was shaking like crazy. I kept hearing all of this crap in my head. My room was really dark because I put, this is not really helpful either, because I put aluminum foil all over the windows. But he said he did it to keep it cool. Uh-huh, sure. I saw that.
You got to have a foil on the windows. Everybody has that.
It was 5 a.m. I decided to go out and get some water, even though I thought I would die or I'd pass out and stop breathing. So when I went out of the room, it was light out. And all of a sudden, that made me calm, like it was just a bad dream. My heart still hurt, and I made it to bed. 3 days later, I am still feeling it. My heart still hurts, and it hurts when I take deep breaths. So this is from a website where people are like, hey, what are the best drugs to get high on? And this guy didn't have that experience, obviously. But there is apparently a lot of data that chorazepam, if you take it in high quantities, really messes you up.
Yeah, well, there's also a lot of data that says if you drink a lot of alcohol in high quantities, you might crash your car. That doesn't mean that we stop.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that we... Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying... Look, I'm an alcoholic, and no one... You know when you watch the funny comedies, and only alcoholics will understand this. You watch the funny comedies, and they're like, I did what last night? No way. Okay, unless you're an alcoholic, you don't have a blackout. You knew exactly what you were doing. If you have a blackout, that means you had so much alcohol that your brain shut everything down just to keep you breathing. That's what a blackout is. And you don't just have one, you know, the first couple of times. I haven't had a drink in years and I had so much to drink. No, you pass out or you vomit first. You have to build up to blackouts. And so when people are like, I blacked out, don't believe it unless they're an alcoholic. If they're having blackouts, that's a sign you're close to death. Okay? It doesn't happen at parties. You knew exactly what you were doing.
And I think that is where that problem for him arises, in that he's saying he did it to feel good. If a doctor prescribes you medicine, you take it and you do something crazy, there's at least an argument.
Yes, not,
you
there, go and not
you,
here.
You take cough syrup because you think it's going to make you feel good, and you know by your own words that you took too much of it.
Yes.
There's very little wiggle room for you there, I think. I mean, it's a weird story, and I guess it's a warning to be careful with this particular medication. But other than that,
it's really frightening because we are all, I don't know. There's so many people in the world right now just trying to escape the pain of whatever it is that they're feeling. They're just trying to escape. And we're seeing this with the opioid crisis that is happening in America. And the bad news is there isn't really any escape. That just makes it much, much worse. Just makes it worse.
Are you depressing the drug people?
I think I am. Addiction? I think I am. Like, if you're addicted, it doesn't get any better. It just, no, it actually does.
For a very short time, that's the, there's a limited.
It's for a short time, it gets better by taking drugs and alcohol, very short. And then it gets much, much worse. And then you think there's no way out. But there is a good way out. And then it gets great.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Vince Flynn was a dear friend and one of the great fiction writers, thriller writers of our age. He died just a few years ago from cancer. And out of all the people that I would have thought was going to beat cancer, it was Vince Flynn. He was just, every time I spoke to him, he was like, this is not beating me. And just an amazing guy, but great writer. They have just made the first Vince Flynn movie for American Assassin. It opens this week. I saw a sneak preview of it last night, and it is really good. A really good action movie that includes a nuclear weapon, that the ending is just tremendous to see. And Rapp's character, Mitch Rapp, is the main character of the Vince Flynn books. I think he is Jack Bauer on steroids, a believable Jack Bauer. This is the first real Mitch Rapp movie and story, and so you get the build up and you figure out who Mitch Rapp really is and what created this guy. It's really good. I was watching it and I thought, Jason Bourne movies kind of feel dated, kind of feel like they were written in the Cold War era, you know, James Bond, obviously. This is a new generation of thrillers and a new generation of action heroes, I think. Mitch Rapp.
I can't wait to see it. It looks great. And I was not aware, completely safe for kids, too, which is a great,
shut up.
Great advantage.
No, it's not.
It's called American Assassin. And you'd think, wait a minute, you shouldn't bring your children
well,
to that.
Well, it had Michael Keaton in it, which...
He's in Mr. Mom.
Yeah, so it's got to be... Here's what happened. My wife was supposed to come with me yesterday, and then I don't know what happened, but in the middle of the day, she said, I can't go. How about Rafe comes with you? And I'm like, okay. I didn't know that it was rated R. I guess I should have thought it through.
I read the book
like 20 years ago.
American Assassin.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, so it wasn't a great idea, but I blame it on my wife. Anyway, it is a little violent and has a little language that probably not appropriate, definitely not appropriate for your kids. So you may want to leave them at home. But Michael Keaton, I will tell you, when Michael Keaton comes on the screen, the first thing I thought was, I like having him back on the screen. I've missed him. He's a great actor. This is a really good movie. There's about 5 minutes towards the end. I'm not going to spoil anything. About 5 minutes towards the end, it gets a little cheesy where it's like, you know what? And we saved a lot of children, too. You're like, oh, shut up. But it's American Assassin. Tremendous. It opens this week.
And you can give your critique on the script. To the co-author of American Assassin tomorrow. He joins us beginning of this hour on tomorrow's program. But one of the things that I love about movies, and I have a new appreciation of them and can go to much more of them because of it, is this ridiculous company called MoviePass.
There's something wrong.
It's too good.
Yes.
When it's too good to be true, it means it's too good.
Right. Mitch Lowe is here. He's the CEO of MoviePass.com. And Mitch, I personally may put you out of business because I see too many movies. So,
hey, that's what we want. We want to reinvigorate the movie theater going, and so okay. We would love to see that.
So I'll bankrupt you. I see almost every movie made, and I love to go to the movies. It is a pastime with me and my family, but we see probably a minimum of 4 movies a month. And under your service, I pay $10. Even in New York, where the ticket is $16, and I can go see any movie I want, and I can see as many movies as I want, as long as it's not the same one over and over again, right?
That's right. It's one a day. It's one a day. Just like your vitamin.
So how's that working for you, mate? I'm trying to figure out the business model. How's that work?
So here's the thing. Yes, there are about 11%, 36 million people in the U.S. and Canada that go to a lot of films every month. They go to roughly 18 films a year on average, and they buy half of all the movie tickets. But there's 51% of the population go to less than a movie a month, and that's who primarily join our service. So, yes, everybody like yourself who goes to lots of movies joins. They get huge value, and they tell everybody about it. But the majority of our subscribers are people who go to 3 to 6 films a year prior to joining MoviePass. When they join, they double the amount of films they go. So now they're going to 6 to 12 movies a year. So the majority of our subscribers roughly go to one a month. And then there's a small group of people who end up going, 5-10 times a month. Okay. And it drives up the average a little bit.
So it's $9.95 a month. It used to be $50 a month.
Yeah, $50.
What happened to where you could drop it down that low?
Well, what we found is, we were, when we were $30 to $50, we were really just appealing to the people who, that 11% who go a lot already. And we got them to go more often, but essentially it was a price point that only appealed to a small group of the public.
Yeah.
And we realized that what we really needed to do is to reinvigorate, especially millennials. You know, over the last five years, millennials have decreased their amount of times of going to the theater by 20%. And the reason why is now they have all these other alternatives. In fact, they talk themselves out of going to the movies. They go, I don't know if it's good enough. You know, I've already got Netflix or Hulu.
Yeah.
I'll just wait and see it then. And what we really, these are people who grew up on subscription. And really what our subscription service is, it's insurance against a bad movie.
Okay, so
now they can go and experiment. And if they don't like it, they just walk out and trash it the next day to their friends.
So when mm-hmm. you put this together, because AMC doesn't mm-hmm. like this, but I think yeah. I think the movie theater experience is just totally changing. I think the future is making me putting me into some sort of a cocoon where I would never, ever want to leave. And that's what's happening, at least here in Texas. That's what's happening with movie theaters where they're great food. They'll deliver yeah. anything. I mean, I'm mm-hmm. guessing there's a few that even would deliver lap dances. I'm not sure. But they just never want you to leave. And I'm guessing that that's where they make their money, not on the actual yeah. ticket.
That's right. Yeah. Concessions are 80% margin. You know, when you buy that popcorn or soda, 80%. And when you buy a ticket, it's roughly 50%.
So
the theaters really want you in the theater. And by the way, when you join MoviePass, what happens, because you're not pulling out that $10 bill to pay for a ticket, you spend more money on concessions, which is great for the theaters. And that's why AMC should love it. And
why don't they?
We had a 2-year partnership with AMC. We both contributed to a blind data report that showed that we doubled people's frequency of going to the movies, increased their consumption of concessions. And AMC, I believe, you know, came to the point where they said, you know, we should just do this ourselves. And so I believe this is a little bit of sour grapes in seeing that kind of we beat them to the punch. I know they will probably release their own subscription program soon.
Mitch, Mitch Lowe of MoviePass.com. Mitch, one of the criticisms I've seen from AMC and others is that you are preparing people to pay $10 a month for movies. And then when you go out of right. business in 2 years, everyone's going to think that the old movie price is too high.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was on the founding executive team at Netflix and the COO of Redbox. And that's exactly what Blockbuster said to us at Netflix. And they said to consumers, don't look at these little guys over here that are offering an innovative service.
Yeah.
Keep paying us the high prices.
Publicly traded now, Mitch? Is this publicly traded?
We're 51% owned. The deal isn't closed yet, but shortly will be majority owned by a public company. It's HMNY, Helios and Matheson. And they are the reason we sold half of the company to them, a little more than half, is that they are a big data and analytics company. Mm-hmm. And what we want to build is this great experience around going to the movies. And we're building upon their foundation, their technology, that'll build a whole night at the movies experience.
I'll tell you, I think this is why AMC is wrong on this. AMC should do what AMC does well, and that is give me a good movie experience. But I wouldn't want a subscription with AMC because then I'm locked into just AMC. I mean, if you were
exactly.
a public, I mean, I would, in this might be the kiss of death, I would invest in your company because I think what the future is companies that say, I just do this one piece and I do it really, really well. And they just
yeah.
start linking pieces together to make everybody's experience super easy.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to listen to consumers. And what typically happens to the dominant player is they lose touch with their consumers and they spend more time trying to protect an old way of doing things at the cost of offering, you know, new benefits to consumers.
That's
exactly what, you know, startups can do is I absolutely love movies. I love them in every way. And, you know, I started with video stores 30 years ago. And I just love movies. And I know the artists, the creative community, makes movies for the theater, for the big screen, the big sound, you know, laughing with other people around you. They don't make them for the mobile phone. And even though that's fun and a great opportunity, you know, it's really the theater.
No, there's nothing better than the
experiences.
Yeah, there's nothing better than the theater.
And Mitch, there is a it is a any theater you want to go to. I think a lot of people would think, oh, well, I have to find one of these theaters. It's literally any theater. You basically have what is a debit card almost.
Yeah, it's over 90% of all the theaters. So there are some theaters, you know, some drive-ins and some places that only take cash that you can't use it. But it's a
can you still use it at AMC? Can you still use it at AMC?
Absolutely, you can still use it at AMC.
And I don't know, Mitch, if you do radio-based customer service, but I have not received my card yet. I've just been using the app, and so we're going to need to work that out.
We absolutely underestimated demand, and we were not prepared for the amount of new subscribers we had. We're still catching up. You know, on those first couple days, we were the third most searched word on Google after Charlottesville and Korea. And we continued to get thousands and thousands of new subscribers every day. And we're catching up fast, but you'll get yours soon. And I apologize. Your first month does not start till you get your card. So even though we charged you, you know, in advance, the month doesn't begin till you get your card. And
that's awesome.
I'm extremely sorry and apologize.
No.
It's a great experience. We're rooting for you, Mitch.
We are.
This is really cool.
Mitch, thanks a lot. Mitch Lowe, he's the CEO of MoviePass.com. That's MoviePass.com. I will be a member by the end of the day. Well, here's something that you haven't thought of for a long time. The MTV Music Awards. When's the last time you cared? When's the last time you even thought, oh, is MTV still on? The MTV Music Awards, the video awards, are still on the air, surprisingly. And I think it was it last weekend or the weekend before? And their ratings, they are hemorrhaging ratings. I think they've lost 60% of their audience in the last couple of years. And they're losing about 1 million viewers every single year. And what's amazing is they become more and more, they try to be more and more outrageous every single year. You know, oh, what can we do? Nothing that hasn't been done.
Right.
Really, there's nothing that hasn't been done.
Michael Jackson isn't around to kiss his fake wife anymore. Like, it's like, there's just nothing more.
Right.
And then Britney and Madonna. That's the last one I think I can remember.
No. You had twerking with What's-Her-Face.
Twerking with What's-Her-Face sounds memorable, but I don't remember.
No, yes, you do. What's her name?
Miley Cyrus.
Okay. That was, you know.
I don't remember
There's
that
no
one.
Place that Miley Cyrus's tongue hasn't been, so we don't really need to see it anymore.
So, I don't want to.
I know. I think that's pretty true. Mm-hmm. So no ratings. Now, listen. This was somebody who was sitting in an executive meeting, and they went, oh, my gosh. Oh, I've got something. Oh, no. You think the ratings have been down? They're not this year. Wait until you hear what I've just booked. I have the descendant of Robert E. Lee. He's a pastor of a church, and he's going to go all crazy about white supremacists. And you'd think to yourself, wow, that would be fairly interesting.
Right.
That already happened, and nobody's talking about it. Like, nobody is talking about it.
That's insane. Yeah. You would think in this media environment that would have been a big story. MSNBC would love that. Maybe they did, of course.
Here is what they do love. They love that he had to leave his church because his church was like, you know what? We don't think we need our pastor on MTV.
Well, it doesn't seem like a normal pastoral location. There are some stories in the Bible that kind of feature people of faith going into situations.
He upheld Black Lives Matter and the Women's March and all of that, and they said, no, thank you. We're going to pass.
Mercury. Love. Courage. Truth.
Even Congress doesn't trust Congress anymore. Yesterday, the Trump administration announced that it would end DACA. That is the Obama-era presidential edict that allowed hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants to avoid deportation. The plan is to give Congress 6 months to fix the problem. And the reaction from Congress? How dare you? How dare you let us handle this? What? Hang on. Even Congress doesn't trust Congress anymore. President Obama said this.
You know, I'm the president of the United States. I'm not the emperor of the United States.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we knew that. We all knew that. I don't think he knew that at the time. Now, Trump has returned the power back to Congress. And they're complaining about it. Our founders knew that the balance of power would work because each branch would want to protect their own power because they'd all be power-hungry freaks. But now, when decisions are tough, they fall all over themselves to give their own power away. Donald Trump said yesterday, I knew some here wish that I could just bypass Congress and change the law myself, but that's not how our democracy works. Oh, wait, no, wait. Hold on just a second. That wasn't Donald Trump yesterday. That was Barack Obama. He was right. He just never lived those words. And now what do we have? Even Congress doesn't trust Congress anymore, and neither should you.
Wednesday, September 6th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So somebody who I have a ton of respect for, because she has been behind enemy lines for a very, very long time and been taking shots from all sides for a very long time, Cheryl Atkinson. She is the author of a new book called The Smear, How Shady Political Operatives and Fake News Control What You See, What You Think, and How You Vote. She was she received an investigative Emmy Award in 2009 for her investigations into the TARP bailout, investigative award in 2002 for her reports on the Red Cross and how they were mismanaging funds, all kinds of awards, all kinds of nominations for Follow the Money, Congressional Oversight, Aid to Haiti, Firestone Tires, and the Dangers of Prescription Drugs and Vaccines, which include the links to autism. A brave woman who used to work for CBS and PBS and all of the S's until she left and went out on her own where she felt she could actually tell the truth. Cheryl Atkinson, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Glenn. Thanks for having me.
So I couldn't have been more surprised as I open up your book a few weeks ago, and there's a opening chapter about how the left really kind of found their voice by destroying me.
Yes, it was a fascinating case study that is much discussed in the smear industry. And I spoke to operatives both on left and right for my book that were who were quite open with me, surprisingly enough.
Yeah.
And really, you know, what they did to you laid the groundwork for future successful smears. It was almost a prototype. And as you saw, there was a memo that had been laid out by a Media Matters, which is a liberal operative group, a memo proposing a lot of these tactics that were used ultimately against you, including hiring private eyes to probe personal lives of reporters that they wanted to squelch, hiring law firms to come up with legal actions to generate things to try to, you know, bully and intimidate people, all kinds of tactics. And for you in particular, as you know, they launched the move to get you off Fox News, I believe, and the ones who operate in that universe, because your program was highly effective in getting out narratives and information that they didn't want out there. So it wasn't so much that they wanted to come after you on moral grounds or for moral reasons. They use that smear operators as the facade to take out their enemies. And one way to recognize the hallmarks of a smear is they overlook the same behavior in people who are their friends.
Yes.
But when it's a target that they want to get out, they amplify the behavior that they found, even when there's a grain of truth, beyond all proportions. And there was $1 million donation, as you know, from George Soros that was publicly announced to Media Matters explicitly to get rid of you as a danger to, you know, all free things in our society.
And you know, Cheryl, what was so crazy is, I mean, I remember coming home in Connecticut before we moved to New York, and we knew people were going through our garbage and everything else, and we just laughed. We sat at the table and just laughed and said, you know, I'm an open book. Like, they're not going to find anything in the garbage. They can just come to the front door and I'll tell them everything. But you sound paranoid. And then when George Soros actually announced $1 million to go to take me off the air and destroy me, no one in the press thought that was a problem.
Right. And furthermore, even after that, as those campaigns continued against different people, Media Matters was still largely held out by a lot in the news media as some sort of neutral watchdog group by those who either didn't do their homework enough to scratch beyond the surface or didn't care to report, as they would pass along narratives from Media Matters, that this is a, you know, self-defined liberal operation group that often, again, holds itself out to be sort of a neutral, maybe media watchdog organization, and has permeated the news media in such a way that it's often quoted as if it's a neutral source. And it and its spring-offs and connected LLCs and charities and super PACs like Correct the Record were used during campaign 2016, often again, as if sort of a neutral group, or even if you knew it was a Democratic group, you didn't realize it was for the sole purpose of electing Hillary Clinton. So it was smearing Bernie Sanders, but without disclosures, as it was presented in the news, that its financial paid interests were really Hillary Clinton.
So, as you know, there is a new Media Matters program, if you will, an announcement of what they're going to be doing and what they're working on now. And it was found on the dark web. And it talks about how they are already in Facebook and Google and YouTube advising them on what needs to be edited out, what is hate speech, what isn't. And everybody still is embracing Media Matters, even though it's clear. I mean, they're not hiding anything.
It's pretty amazing. And that's why it's seen largely as a, you know, a huge success. David Brock, as I say in the book, was described with equal parts, you know, admiration and disgust by others in the smear industry, because he's really been able to do something that maybe conservatives have also tried to do and other liberals, but none has done it so well, which is to utterly permeate the narrative and the news environment in such a way that they're able to get their messages across, often without people disclosing the paid financial interest behind them. And he, by the way, has gotten very rich off this industry of the smear groups, whether it's the super PACs or the charities under different names or the websites or the other nonprofits that he operates. And again, I think in the news media, when they present us with from this group with a set of facts or talking points or ideas for stories with a lot of research, we're not just with them, with many other PR groups that are in this industry, we're not scratching the surface enough and asking wrong questions. We're taking what they say and pushing it along. And it's almost like it's unpopular now. Maybe Facebook feels this pressure. They create this appearance that there's overwhelming grassroots support for what they want, and they use fake Twitter accounts and all their organizations to make it look like everybody wants you guys to sort through and curate the news and what we see online. Mm-hmm. Really, the public's not clamoring for that. That's a manufactured issue. The whole idea that someone needs to sort through for us did not come from grassroots. It came from these organizations, but it was made to look in the eyes of Facebook and Google and so on as if the people want it.
So, Cheryl, you're not a newcomer to this. I mean, you have been, you know, winning Emmys and winning awards for investigative journalism, and you've exposed both sides, and you've exposed some really nasty stuff. When you got into this, what was the thing, as you closed the book, The Smear, that you said, I could have believed a lot of things, but I would have never believed this had I not just found it myself?
Well, a lot of this I learned over time. So it wasn't just in writing the book that I'm not sure there's anything I discovered for the first time as I was researching and writing the book. I wrote it because I had learned some of these things. I think the one thing that gave me chills to hear it said out loud was when one smear operator said to me, well, there were really two comments, but one of them was that everything you see in your daily life, whether it's something put out by a charity, something you see or read on the news, or any other image that crosses your path, he says is put there for a reason by somebody who often paid a lot of money to put the image before you. So think about that, how much they think they control op-eds in the newspaper, public comments on the Federal Register, the narratives that you see on the news that are repeated over and over. And the second thing that kind of gave me chills was to hear an operative admit what I kind of knew, but he said, you know, an entire movement can be started with a handful of fake Twitter accounts and 140 characters, meaning they know the power of free social media and that the fake accounts that they operate under the names of actors with software that can rotate IP addresses and make it look like original, real connected people, that can influence a whole movement or spark a whole movement that ultimately does become grassroots because people don't know the origins.
So, Cheryl, we're facing a time now where we have political and civil unrest. We have economic troubles headed our way. We have natural disaster. Yesterday we're looking at possibly global war or nuclear war. And a press that is completely out of control, and I believe on both sides, and the people don't know how to find the truth. They don't know what the truth is, and many are not even looking for the truth. How does this shake out? How does our story? What's the next chapter in the American story?
Well, I'd like to be more optimistic, and I hope I can be down the road, but from a news standpoint, I don't see an easy way out of this fix that we're in because, as I described, you know, it's taken years for us to get here. And I remember talking to some attorneys at CBS that I had review and approve my stories. And maybe 10 years ago, I first said to them, when we saw these efforts to shape the news by these large companies that work behind the scenes to do sometimes perfectly legal things, even if objectionable, but sometimes unethical things to try to stop stories. And I said, you know, this industry is coming up and we're so busy just putting out the news. We're playing defense when they smear us and try to discredit our stories because we're reporting things they want to try to squelch. We need to have our own plan, our own recognition of this and a way to fight back because they're destroying reputations of news organizations and people doing important coverage. And, you know, there was just no real attention paid to it. And I tried to raise that also at investigative reporter conferences, because this was happening to many reporters who were reporting on, you know, corporations and political interests that wanted to try to discredit and stop them. But as an industry, we haven't done a good job in recognizing it. And furthermore, we've allowed operatives to become part of our newsrooms. You know, we've hired them not only as pundits and commentators, but we've made them reporters and anchors and managers. So it's not an accident that when you turn on the news or read it, so often it comes across as narratives and talking points. We've become part of the industry.
Our conversation with Cheryl Atkisson continues in just a minute.
The book is The Smear, How Shady Political Operatives and Fake News Control What You See, What You Think, and How You Vote. The link is always posted at World of Stew on Twitter and at Glenn Beck.
After California, Texas has the second largest economy in the United States, and a huge contributor to that economy is the Houston Woodlands Sugarland area. It had a GDP of $503 billion in 2015. That is, just so you have some concept, the size of the Swedish economy. The Houston area. Now, estimates of Harvey's cost vary, but some are predicting that the storm is going to be the most expensive in U.S. history at over $190 billion that surpasses Hurricane Katrina. What else is happening? We have Irma roaring up towards Florida. That may hit this weekend. That may be, if we're lucky, it will be a hurricane Category 3 by the time it hits, but people are already starting to evacuate in Miami and the Keys and elsewhere. Beyond that, we have wildfires in California. We are we're on the edge here. We make it. Our story ends well, but we better button up.
Mercury.
A conversation with Cheryl Atkinson. She is the author of The Smear, How Shady Political Operatives and Fake News Control What You See, What You Think, and How You Vote. Cheryl, you just said that an operative told you something that is should everybody's blood should run cold, that everything that you see and read has been planted for a reason. How does the American public deal with that kind of knowledge and find the happy middle ground between, you know, the conspiratorial Alex Jones, everything is a false flag, to the media matters that everything is real?
That's a really good question. I mean, I think you start by saying, like I do, there's pretty much nothing I see on the news that I take at face value and believe immediately. It doesn't mean it's not true. Don't get me wrong. But I know that there may be more to the story. I just learned that in journalism anyway. The most obvious story and conclusions you can draw, or the most obvious thing that's being put out by somebody, often proves to be totally different than you thought. So it's just, you know, good counsel to question what you see. But also, particularly if what you see is the same thing over and over. I mean, think about the thousands of news stories happening around the world every day. And yet you look at the news or watch something on television, and it's the same two or three stories over and over, often using the same words, interviewing the same people from the same viewpoint. They're not going to give necessarily two or three sides to the story. That's absolutely when you should suspect there's a paid effort. So I ask myself, who wants me to think that and why? And that can just help open your mind up a little more to what you're seeing. I call it the Truman Show-esque alternate reality. If you remember that old movie with James Carey, where he didn't know he was living basically on a movie set. That's kind of what they're describing. And I think it may sound somewhat conspiratorial, but the people in this universe see it that way. It doesn't hurt to think, you know, to think to some degree. Now, again, maybe going overboard is to think that everything you see isn't true. And I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it may not be the whole truth. And sometimes it may not be true. And sometimes it may be true. But you just have to, I think, look at it more critically.
Cheryl, as someone who's worked with Glenn for a long time, I sort of enjoy him being tortured. But you go into you're welcome. You go into depth in the book quite a bit about the specific things they did to Glenn to try to ruin his career and have him lose a lack of kind of lose credibility with the audience. Can you go into some of that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is effective primarily because it's effective with management, even more than viewers. They launched a large advertising campaign effort, which, again, is perfectly legal. But they want advertisers to believe or to create the impression that this is a grassroots thing that's happening from the public when it's not. They partnered in the case of Glenn, I believe, with a separate group.
Color
they called
of Change.
Advertisers.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, Color of Change, which would not be then, you know, it looks like, oh, this is a widespread effort by a diverse group of people. Look at how everybody in the world is, you know, so down on Glenn Beck right now. When in fact, it's again a relatively small handful of the same donors trying to give the impression, because Glenn is dangerous to their interests, trying to give the impression that there's some sort of giant grassroots effort.
And you're seeing that you're seeing that used now on Donald Trump, where it's the same group of people. They're just, it's the Tides Foundation. They stand up as a different group over here, and then, oh, look, it's mothers against whatever over here and fathers for this over here. And it's really the same people, same money.
Right. So I wrote, I'm just reading one short passage. Media Matters also quietly funnels $200,000, which is a lot of money in this world, to a group called Citizen Engagement Laboratory, a political advocacy nonprofit that calls itself a home for social entrepreneurs. The laboratory is funded in part by grants from Soros's Open Society Foundation. So he's getting you two ways there, Glenn. The $200,000 from Media Matters is for a campaign to expose Glenn Beck's racist rhetoric in an effort to educate advertisers about the practices on his show.
You have to read Cheryl Atkinson's new book. It's called The Smear. how shady political operatives are controlling what you see and Mercury. What you think.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You're young, you're healthy, you have your whole life in front of you, and that is what Katie thought. She had no idea that anything was wrong with her until she went in for a routine ultrasound with her second child, Willow. And during the ultrasound, it was discovered that Katie had cervical cancer, and the doctor said, "You have to abort your child. You're going to die." And the answer was, no, I'm not going to kill my child.
For me, that's just, it's not in the cards for me. I don't think that I bring myself to do that. People call me selfish for not aborting. I believe that every life out there has a very divine purpose.
Katie carried Willow to term, and the doctors were able to remove the cancer. She was cancer-free and mom to a beautiful baby girl. And then trouble set in. Willow stopped eating a couple of months in. The little girl was rushed to the hospital, stayed there for most of her first year.
All but 12 days was spent between our tiny hospital back in Montana and Seattle Children's Hospital.
She dealt with pneumonia and heart failure and respiratory failures, one thing after another, weeks and weeks of testing. And finally, she was diagnosed with a rare terminal condition called inclusive cell disease, which inhibits growth and breathing and heart function, digestion, everything.
There have been a few, very few kiddos with this that have made it shortly past 10, but the average span of these kids is 3 to 5 years.
There are only 72 confirmed cases in the world.
There's no treatment at all whatsoever because there's so little funding like there is for cancer researches. All the research funding comes directly from the few families that have been affected.
Willow was finally released from the hospital just in time for her first birthday. While preparing for her birthday, Katie encountered another blow. She became the victim of domestic violence and found herself now a single mother of two young children.
Once Willow started getting sick, unfortunately, her father, because of the way he grew up, the only way he knew how to cope was to have alcohol to drown out everything he needed to cope.
There is a remarkable person inside mom.
Even though every birthday, just like for every family, is a huge milestone and like it's very exciting, for us it's also extremely, extremely bittersweet. And so because we know that we're not going to have very many.
Because Katie hasn't lost hope.
You know, none of us can say what's going to happen or how we're going to handle a situation like this until, you know, we're on the front line of it.
Willow is dependent on 24/7 feeding tubes. She's on heart and oxygen monitors, yep. Medication from 6 to 10 p.m., BiPAP at night, requires what is called deep suctioning, a threading of suction catheter through her nose and the airway. Oh, this is so harsh for you. You can't go to a shelter because
no.
You can't bring Willow into the shelter. She gets a cold and she can die. Mm-hmm. You had a goal of $5,000, and you were, last I checked, you were at $2,900. Mm-hmm. That doesn't seem like an awful lot of money to be able just to keep the roof over your head.
It's not. I don't really set my goals too big because I don't want to be disappointed. And I don't want to come off like, you know, I'm asking for a handout, like, you know, I'm asking the world of people. That's not the person that I am, so.
You're remarkable, Katie. And I applaud you for your strength and expect miracles because they will happen. Yesterday, you were part of that miracle, and I just wanted to bring you an update. Yesterday, when I spoke to her 24 hours ago, her goal was $5,000 and she had raised $2,950. This morning, as I walked into the studio, she had raised just over $32,000 just from this audience. Listening to her, and especially in the last few minutes of the interview, where you could hear her voice crack and say, "This is not who I am. I am not a person that asks for help." Those are the ones that are the most fun to help. If you want to help out, you want to join in, you can go to my Twitter feed, at Glenn Beck. I just put the link there, at Glenn Beck on the Twitter feed. Help Katie find a new home. It has been a whirlwind of 24 hours, and Pat Gray, who Pat is one of my oldest, dearest friends, and starting his own talk show on the Blaze TV and Blaze Radio starting next Monday, joins us now with just a few words about DACA, I have a feeling.
Yeah, well, the word of the day is cruel, Glenn. Cruel. As in... It's cruel for Trump to end the DACA program. Cruel. From Obama, cruel. Biden, it's so cruel. Bill Clinton, it's cruel. Mark Zuckerberg, it's cruel. Nobody says it's mean or mean-spirited. They all got together and decided the word was cruel. And they're all whining about how cruel it is that Trump has rescinded DACA. It's so cruel. Cruel that they'll have anxiety again. These poor dreamers will have anxiety again. And by the way, you control the language, you control the society. They're called dreamers. They're not the illegal aliens. They're not even undocumented immigrants. They're dreamers. They're just young people who dream of a more perfect union. They dream of a more wonderful America. It's as if they're magical creatures or so, like they're unicorns. I mean, what? They're dreamers. How did we let this happen? Dreamers can't have any anxiety whatsoever. And I want to know why. I've got a buttload of anxiety. Why are dreamers anxiety free? And citizens can have all the anxiety thrust upon them that's available in the universe. But not the dreamers, not the unicorns. And but the thing that's really driving me out of my mind right now is that Trump, his actual goal here, let's be clear about this. He just tweeted this morning, Congress now has 6 months to legalize DACA, something the Obama administration wasn't able to do. If they can't, I'll revisit this issues. So... What the numbskull Democrats aren't talking about is he's actually on their side. Mm. He wants amnesty for the dreamers, for the unicorns. He wants them to live here in America with us. And he's telling Congress that if they don't pass a law granting them citizenship within 6 months, he's going to take it into his own hands and, I don't know, direct some kind of executive order that legalizes them. He wants to make the amnesty permanent for them. And I don't remember that campaign promise.
No, I remember just the opposite.
Yeah.
Everyone who was on stage, if you had all said anything like this, he immediately called you little, lying, stupid, or whatever.
Every time.
And now this is going to be the policy. We are going to get that.
Yeah, we're going to get
that
amnesty
cram down.
You, all of us, I think, might be old enough to remember when the Dream Act, which is what the Dreamers are named after,
right,
was like the litmus test of whether you were an amnesty person or not. If you supported the Dream Act, you were an evil amnesty person.
Right.
And if you opposed it, then you had some credentials on the border. Now, the guy who
That wasn't a blanket thing just applied to everyone without any kind of thought.
I mean, it was, wasn't it?
Oh, you're right. It was. Right. I forgot. It was. There was no room for any kind of disagreement, any kind of nuance.
No.
You were immediately drummed off the stage and out of society if you were like, well, now, wait a minute. What are we going to do? Amnesty, Dream Act guy. You were immediately drummed out.
I mean, you.
And now it's going to become our reality.
You gave like no a doubt. Sandwich to a person on the border one time, and and Breitbart.
Oh my gosh,
was
that was the worst thing of all time.
For that. The worst thing you could ever do.
And now I suspect they're supporting him in this, right? I mean, I don't hear any.
I don't hear any
from the right.
I don't.
I mean, the left misunderstands completely what he's doing, and they just hate him just because he's him. But they're not paying attention to him. He's on your side.
Yeah.
He's actually trying to grant them amnesty.
And he's trying to make it more permanent, right? Because right now, it's just that any president could change DACA. Any president could pull it back.
And so if Congress makes a law, that's a big difference.
This will be like permanent until, you know, Congress passes another law, and we've seen how difficult that is.
The other thing I've noticed from the media is that they keep talking about how Trump is making a mockery out of the promise that's written on the Statue of Liberty. Now, I love the Statue of Liberty, too, but let's keep in mind one thing here. The Statue of Liberty is not the Constitution. So
isn't she holding it or something?
No,
she's got a tablet.
She's got a tablet.
Oh, that would be the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Darn it.
Second, what's written on the statue is a poem. Now, I grant you, it's a really nice poem,
and
Glenn reads it really well.
And I will tell you that it is misinterpreted as a poem. It's a very clear poem.
But it is a poem, and poems are not the law. Poems are not policy. Poems are nice words that rhyme. They're nice words that rhyme.
Sometimes they don't rhyme, Pat.
Sometimes they don't, but in this particular case, I believe they do.
Mm-hmm. So that is Pat... Unleashed, unchained, unstaked. You will hear him Monday through Friday only on the Blaze Radio and Blaze TV beginning Monday.
This show cannot start fast enough. Bring it on.
I'm ready.
Mercury.
So how many disasters have there been to where you hear about the unsavory characters, the guys who come in and they're looting, they're stealing, they're doing something horrible? Have you noticed not just the lack, but almost the dearth of any of those stories coming from what's happening in Texas? It could be that Texans are really good people and they're, you know, banding together and helping their neighbor, and all of that is true. But it also could be that they're Texans and they have guns, and everyone knows they're serious. And everyone knows that there is not a jury in Texas that is going to put a gun owner rightfully protecting himself, his house, his family, or his property in jail. Not one. It might be the reason why we haven't seen a lot of looting. There are signs, and I saw one this weekend when I was in Houston. But there are signs now that people are putting up in their neighborhoods: if you loot, we shoot. Another one had an image of bodies, and the sign just said, "There's nothing inside worth dying for."
Jeez.
And these signs are going up. One person I saw on television yesterday, they said, "If you come down looking, you come down this street looking for problems, you're going to get shot." And they said, the neighbor said, "Yeah, we've already stopped one situation. I don't expect we're going to have another one."
No. That's pretty convenient. Some of those got a little dark. Luckily, loot and shoot rhyme, which makes the sign work really well.
Yeah, it makes me seem like Jesse Jackson could be saying that one.
Yeah, no, it's true. By the way, we went over the worst hurricanes as far as wind speed earlier.
Yes.
And something I know maybe you'll notice here. This is the top 16 hurricanes with max winds over 175 miles per hour. 1961, Carla. 2007, Felix. 1977, Anita. 1979, David. 1992, Andrew. 1932, Cuba. 1955, Janet. 2007, Dean. 2005, Katrina. 1969, Camille. 1998, Mitch. 2005, Rita. 1935, the Florida Keys. 1988, Gilbert, 2005, Wilma, and 1980, Alan. If you listen to that list, you'll know, and you'll know right away, obviously, there is not one day, one date before 2012, and that's because of global warming. None of those storms occurred within all in the last 5 years, those storms, if you listen to that list. All of them within the last 5 years.
There does seem to be a cycle. It's, you know, 1930s, 1950s, and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
70s and 80s, and then the 2000s.
It does seem
like
that
there's
way.
A cycle.
It does seem, and it's almost like you could explain that if, for example, you had a piece of evidence like 12 consecutive years with no major storms whatsoever hitting the coast.
Somebody wrote and said, you guys are so disingenuous because you say there's been no major storms because of global warming. Well, there have been storms all over the world. Well, yes, there have been, but we were specifically talking about Al Gore speaking about how that Florida is going to be gone and there are going to be these superstorms that wipe out the East Coast and all of the Gulf.
Right.
That didn't happen.
Yeah. And look, we're seeing that it can happen.
Yes.
I mean, it's a real possibility,
correct.
But it's true that when a hurricane hits a Category 5 in the middle of the ocean, no one seems to care. But there's no trend in tornadoes. There's no trend in droughts. There's no trend in saturation. These are big deals.
Mercury.